Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's stream. It is, of course, Film Club, and tonight we are reviewing a film for a very, very good friend of PA. It's, of course, Cat Hugger. She'd been saying to me, you need to review this film. You need to do this particular film. It's so good. You've got to do it. So we're doing it. And that film is Dogville. And Dogville is one hell of a complicated film with a lot of moral complexities and interesting messages. So it's a film that I definitely recommend you watch. And if you haven't watched it already, there will be some plot spoilers in this because it is a very, very, well, it's very, very interesting. But you can't really discuss the moral complexity of this without discussing the plot. Anyway, we're live tonight on Odyssey. Odyssey appears to be working again. It is working again, in fact. I'd like to thank the Odyssey team for being kind enough to help me troubleshoot the issues. We're live on DLive. We're live on Radio Albion. If you want to contribute to the film, the stream, if you want to contribute to the stream, you can do through the usual methods. You can either send a paid or non-paid question via Odyssey, or you can send it via Entropy. So any questions that you send in tonight, paid or non-paid, we'll answer in the second half of the stream. Obviously, I appreciate any paid gifts, any donations are greatly appreciated. You can also contribute to my work via cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies are now all worthless. They're the magic beans of the world. So if you want to give me all your magic beans to look after and put in a big pot of magic beans, I'll happily take them. And finally, if you want to get in touch with me, you can do by writing to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And that gets us past the intros. So let's talk about this film, and wow, what a film. So this is a very, very odd film, and we're going to split the review of the film into two parts. We're going to talk about the way the film's made, the way the film's presented, the visual style, and we're also going to talk about the morality of the film and what people think was the core message behind this film. And I think it's fair to say that we'll probably all agree that the acting was superb. The acting was very, very strong in this film. And I don't think that's not really going to be an issue. But it certainly is a strange film. So let's start by going around the group. Laura's a little late tonight, by the way, because she's having trouble putting Catherine to bed because Catherine's teething. So we'll start with St. Harrison. St. Harrison, how are you doing, my friend? Have you had a nice weekend? And what did you think to this film? What were your initial impressions?
Good evening, everyone. It has been a nice weekend. As some of you may know, I made a Christmas pudding ready for Christmas Day yesterday, which may or may not poison people. And today we went with a new couple who joined PA Eastern after reading about the leaflets in the paper to the Remembrance Day parade in Norwich, which was nice. The film, when it started, I thought it might be a joke and it might just eventually evolve into being in a real location. I thought, I can't sit through 3 hours of this, but we'll get on to that. I had seen a couple of his previous films. His first one that I saw was The Idiots back in 1998. That was weird, but you could tell he was a little bit eccentric. And then there was The Antichrist, which I turned off about half an hour into because it was rubbish. And then I watched some of Nymphomaniac, which is like a 5-hour porno. So he's someone who does court controversy. And then there was this, which I'd never bothered to watch, not for any particular reason. So it was nice to have a film that I didn't have any predisposed opinions of, if that's the right word. And it's hard going to start with, but once you get used to the fact that they are literally just going to be in a soundstage for 3 hours, you focus more on the story. But yeah, we'll get on to that.
Okay, thank you so much. Nativist Concern, how are you doing, my friend? Did you have a nice weekend? And did you like the film? What were your initial impressions?
Hi, lads. I've had a very good weekend, actually. I came to Warsaw for the Nationalist March and was doing a bit of filming there, which was really good. Met loads of new people and been hanging out with them. So it's been very good. I didn't have a lot of time to watch the film, so I've literally just watched it today for the first time whilst very tired. It's a bit of a mind fuck, a very original piece. It was heavily criticized. Well, it was polarizing when it came out. It was criticized as, needlessly pretentious by some and as a masterpiece by others. And I can see it both ways. I probably lean towards it being pretentious, but when it's done in such a way, this tiny set with blank screens behind, it does make you focus even more on the character, the interaction of the characters, the quality of the acting, and the morality behind the story. So in that regard, I do think it's effective. And I can understand why people really like it. The acting is flawless. A lot of great actors in there that I already rated. Von Trier, I did watch Nymphomaniac recently, and I do think he is a bit of a new leftist, assuming that, all these people are secretly sexually depraved and everything like this. I mean, it was a bit shocking when the 10-year-old boy asked to be spanked by Grace, and things like that. So you could probably guess that it's a Von Trier film if you've seen a couple of his others as well. Very original, things to think about, and I guess we'll get into the morality of the story over the next couple of hours.
Okay, well, I'll start by saying I always ask people what their initial impressions were of the film. And that's really important because when you first put a film on, when you first, turn on the film or put it in the DVD player or fire up the laptop, however you watch films these days, or even if you sat in the cinema, the opening scenes of a film set the tone. The music, the credits, the opening scene. Think of like a Bond film. Those opening credits are iconic, and they set the tone for the rest of the production. And I've got to say, when I started watching this film, I did not like it. I didn't like it one bit. The whole film is set on a soundstage with very, very minimal scenery. In fact, you could best liken it to watching a play rather than watching a play that's been sort of filmed like a movie, rather than watching a movie. There's not proper sets, there's not proper scenery. And considering the whole film is set in one tiny little, backwater town up in the mountains, there's absolutely no need for this. They could have created a very, very wonderful set that would have served exactly the same purpose, and it would have cost virtually nothing, and it would have made the film better as a film, because I believe films are visual mediums. You watch a film because it's a visual medium. You're watching it. It's not an audio book. It's not a story. It's a film. It's a moving picture, and you want the film to be visually engaging. Just like if you were playing a computer game, you'd play that because you want it to be interactive. You wouldn't play a computer game where you just hold down a button and a movie plays. And if you take your finger off the button, the movie stops playing. That's not a game. That's just, a movie that you have to hold down a button for. And I feel that this kind of misses, I thought Von Trier misses the point of what a movie is. And I think the whole way this is set up was indeed needlessly pretentious. And I think that at first made me think, oh my gosh, what is this? But then I watched the film. And it's a film that has such an amazing and compelling and thought-provoking story that winds all over the place. It's a story of a young girl who's running away from mobsters. And at first you think that she's a victim of these mobsters, you know, or maybe she knows something about them, or maybe they're trying to kill her and she's running away. And she escapes to this, like I say, tiny little town in America called Dogville. And she's taken in and they decide that they're going to look after her. And at first, she offers to make good on this with the people of the town by doing little chores around the town for the different townsfolk to make their life a little bit better, to make everyone's life a little bit easier. And at first, she gets on very well and everyone loves her. And there's a high point in the film where everyone asks her to stay and says, Grace is part of the town and we couldn't live without Grace now. However, over time, the town demands more and more of Grace and treats her more and more, not like a human being, and not like one of the town, but as a slave, and ends up abusing her. And what comes to pass is eventually, as things reach boiling point, as things get more and more depressing in the town, Grace, who made one particular man in the town promise that he wouldn't turn her into the mobsters, he turns her in to the mobsters towards the end of the film, and he goes back on all of his promises to her, and he shows himself to be as bad as everyone else in the town, just in a slightly different way. And the mobsters turn up, and in fact, she's the daughter of the main mobster, and she was running away from him because she wanted to prove a point about people. And she had a different outlook on life to her father. And at this point, there is a very, very interesting conclusion to this film. A conclusion that is in some ways satisfying, in some ways horrifying. But it's very, very different. The morality at the end is very, very different to your average Hollywood fare. And it makes for very, very interesting viewing. And obviously, if you've not seen the film before, I don't really want to ruin it all, but it's actually a very hard film to discuss without spoiling the film for people, because the plot and the morality tale is the star. And I suppose it could be argued that Lars von Trier was trying to make that point by not having a nice set, but I still think that's pretentious and needless. But I persevered with this, and you can probably watch this as you imagine you're watching a play, or maybe even you could even just listen to this film. You could listen to this film and you could enjoy it that way. You could almost enjoy this film as if it were an audiobook, with the odd glance at the screen. It's not something you have to be totally invested in for the acting or the action on screen. It is the story that grips you. And that's the interesting thing. So to come in here and say my first impressions were this huge negative, and at first I actually couldn't stand it at first. But then as the film unfolded, I became more and more hooked. And in the end, I love the story. I loved the story. It gripped me. I wanted to see what happened next. And when I'd finished watching it, I actually went back and rewatched certain bits that were key parts of the film just to hear those sections again, because it really, really is a compelling story. So that's my initial take on the film. Now, obviously, we've got out of the way the soundstage issue, the fact that this was just set on one soundstage and it wasn't actually like a proper or traditional film. So, I'm going to throw this over to St. Harrison and Nativist Concern now. Guys, what did you think to this? Did you enjoy this minimalistic style? Do you think it's something that was sort of inspired, or do you just think it was pretentious nonsense?
I'll be honest, like the first 15 minutes, if this wasn't for Film Club, I would have switched it off because it just annoyed me. But obviously, I have to persevere because you have to review it. But then after about the 15-minute mark, if you can get past that, as I think you both said, you start to focus on the characters and the story. And it is a really interesting story because it's essentially a mystery. Yeah, it obviously wasn't going to be just her hiding from the mobs, as there was going to be more behind it. And the relationship between her and that absolute simp, who I think the only reason he shopped her in at the end is because he's the only one who didn't get his leg over with her. And so, yeah, as you say, you could just listen to it as well. In terms of the whole soundstage thing, I like the way that if it was daytime, everything was white around. When it was nighttime, everything was black. So even though it was quite minimalist and pretentious, you still knew kind of where it was in the day, what kind of season it was. The narrator helped as well, which I thought John Hurt did a good job of that, even though all he had to do was read. Like you say, the film cost $10 million. They could have built a small little set of about five houses and the little church, which would have sufficed, and it still would have been exactly the same film, but probably more bearable for the general public to watch, which is probably why it failed. But no, it was a good story, a very good cast, except for Chloe Sevigny, who just annoys me. And the fact that she was going about how, oh, she was glad that Grace turned up because how long she's the most beautiful woman. Let's face it, it's a small town. The only reason everyone was after her is because she was the only youngish looking woman there. Not because she's good looking, because she's not. But anyway, that's by the by. The last 15 minutes of the film were really good, and they do kind of make you reevaluate the whole film. So me and Mr. Sam Harrison got halfway through the film like, oh, this must nearly be over. And at the end, she's like, I really like that ending. And it kind of puts the rest of the film into perspective as well. But I don't know, we're going to come on to the themes and the morality of it. But no, it was overly pretentious, but it's definitely worth a watch. I wouldn't put anyone off from watching it.
I'm going to have to disagree on the attractiveness of Nicole Kidman. I do think she is quite tasty myself. But yeah, I mean, when I first started watching, I was very, very tired, and I'd never seen a film set up like this before. So I actually ended up rewinding the first 10 minutes and starting again just to let it sink in properly. And then it just felt like, you know, a play on TV. It could be done on a stage with a live audience. It is that small. But yeah, I'd lean towards pretension. It's not what I'd usually go for. And Mark made the point of before we went live that, you know, for something set in this kind of environment, in this small village, they could have done the whole thing for no money. And it would have been just as good, if not better, but without the sort of artsy avant-garde kind of doing something different, and still have all the moral weight behind it. Although I suppose one of the rape scenes was sort of done in very close proximity to the other characters in the environment. So I suppose that's sort of getting at the point that, you know, rape and sexual assault happens all around us, but it's, you know, it's just around the corner and it's not explicit in society. So yeah, Von Trier seems to focus a lot on sexuality and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, getting back to the original question. Yeah, I'm still undecided. It's all very fresh in my head. I think I'm going to have to make my final conclusion on the film on the second viewing. But yeah, I'll leave it there for now.
Okay, I think something else about this film that I've got to say with the soundstage is at first it was one of those things that it was off-putting. Now, I actually sat down to watch this with Mrs. Mark, and she got about 5 minutes into it, and she was like, this is just awful. I'm not interested. And obviously I then said, okay, fair enough. I'll watch it alone. And obviously I did. And that's the interesting thing. The film did really, really grow on me. It ended up being absolutely compelling. Now, it does have a long runtime as well. And I think that's the other reason that the odd setup is so jarring and so sort of off-putting, because it's a 3 hour long film. And if you're going to watch a film for 3 hours, you don't really want to be watching something that, you know, is effectively rubbish, or something that's sort of visually off-putting to you or has such a weird style. But the story is absolutely incredible. And as I was watching it, I've got to say, as the film unfolds, there's a lot of films that you can see where they're going. You can see where a lot of films are going. And this film hit this sort of midpoint where Grace has escaped from the mobsters. She's been welcomed by the town. She's fallen in love with Tom, this simpy character in the town. She's helping everyone out. Everyone's welcomed her. They're all being kind to her. She's made life better for everyone. And she has effectively been accepted. But then after that point, things go downhill. And the townspeople demand more and more of her, to the point where they start bullying her, abusing her, and taking for granted their power over her, to the point where she is raped, she's brutalized, she's spoken down to, she's treated as a second-class citizen, and eventually she's chained to a huge old metal flywheel and has a bell put round her neck so that they can monitor her whereabouts, so she can't escape, so that the townsfolk always know where she is and if she's moving about, because of the ringing of her bell. And even the man who's meant to be in love with her is also abusing her, and also is really, you know, not siding with her when he should side with her. And it makes then for very, very uncomfortable viewing. So I would say this film really has three acts. It's split into nine chapters, but it has Grace arriving, winning the townsfolk over and being welcomed. Then the film gets a lot darker. And then you have the second part of the film, which is the abuse. And then finally, you have the third part of the film, which is when the mobsters turn up, you find out who Grace is, and you get a conclusion to the film. And the conclusion that you might draw could actually be different for everyone. Now, when I do these film reviews, I actually do take them very seriously. And I not only watch the film, but I try to listen to sort of positive and negative ideas from other people. I read about the film. I read about the making of the production. I read about it all. And this is one of those strange films where it didn't really get a lot of people agreeing on what the actual meaning of the film was. I mean, Grace arrives in this small town. She is indebted to the people. She starts helping them. The people then abuse her. The mobsters turn up. The twist is the leading mobster is her father, and he'd had a row with her. And the row is essentially over the fact that Grace was a liberal. Grace was a liberal, and she wanted to see the best in people. And her father believed that might was right. People need putting in their place, and that you can't go around seeing the good in people. And when she has arrived in Dogville, she sees the good in all the people in Dogville and tries to help them and does her best to see the best in these otherwise sort of scruffy, downtrodden people, who then go on, when they have the power themselves, to abuse her. So I'm going to throw this out. I have three ideas of what this film is about. But St. Harrison, nativist, what are your ideas on what this film's actually about?
In terms of the Grace character, it's something that came to kind of fruition at the end, something Mrs. St. Harrison mentioned earlier, in that at the point where she's starts getting abused, she lets it happen. Now, before you all jump on me for that, she could leave at any point because she constantly threatens throughout the film. She'll go, I'll just leave if they don't want me. So if they don't all vote, ring the bell 15 times, she'll bugger off down the hill and go on her way. If she felt that threatened, she would have gone before she got chained up, obviously. So it led us to think that perhaps at that point, she let them do what they want, let them be as evil as they want, because she knew that at the end, she could just have them all killed, which she does. Sorry, people. So while she starts off as this well-meaning character, halfway through the film, she realises that no, not everyone's nice. The world isn't perfect. You can't see the good in everyone. And then it's at that point she knows that she can get revenge at any time. And then the simp falls for it. And alas, they all die because of her. So I do think she doesn't care really what's happening to her halfway through the film onwards, because she knows that she can just have them all killed. She has the ultimate power over them, which she does once James Caan turns up. I mean, there are other things like don't let strangers into your small town. There's a high trust society that's brought down by an outsider, but I'm sure we'll get onto the other themes as well. But ultimately, I don't think she's as much of a victim as it's portrayed in the film, because, as I say, she could have left at any time, like she kept threatening to. But I don't know if you two agree, or anyone watching.
Well, what the film is ultimately about is the age-old topic of the moral decay of man when it's put under pressure. You know, we've discussed it on so many other films like A Clockwork Orange, etc., that, you know, our history was based on fear of God and Christian morality. And in more modern times, you know, there's just this veneer of morality. And, you know, these sort of artistic pieces explore how man acts without the fear of God. And this very much focuses on power relations and how that pertains to sexual relations. And that's a massive talking point of the New Left. And if you look at von Trier's, you know, upbringing, you know, his parents were, or at least one of them was a communist. And, you know, these moral themes have been ever present in his life. Evidently. So, you know, that's ultimately what the film deals with. And the ending is the sort of Old Testament revenge. That's my short analysis of the, you know, what it's really about.
Okay. This is my thoughts on, or these are my thoughts on the film. I think what I took from it is, firstly, that liberalism is flawed, that seeing everyone as inherently good and trying to just see the best in everybody is a flawed way of looking at the world. Now, Grace goes to Dogville and she wants to see the best in everybody in Dogville. And she starts to look at all these characters, and the viewer sees the flaws of these characters, sees the failings. Chuck is obviously an angry man. The doctor is a hypochondriac. He's also dotes on his son. His son is a weaselly, simpy, self-important guy who believes he's far more capable than he is. And everyone in Dogville has an issue. But Grace sees or tries to see past those failings. She tries to see the good in everyone instead. And this fails her. And I think that's a very important message. You can't just look for the good in people. You have to view people as they are. I think the second important message from Dogville is that really you only get to know the true worst excesses of people when those people have power. When those people wield power, that's when you really know what a person is like. When a person is held down, when a person has very little, when a person wields no power, you can't really judge them. But once they have power, how they wield that and how they wield that over others tells you a lot about that person. And all the people in Dogville had very, very little power in their lives when Grace arrived. When Grace arrives in Dogville, the people of Dogville have nothing and they make the best of it. And she chooses to view them as humble, decent people with the right love, the right care, the right attention, will be better people. They will blossom. And she gives them power over her. And it works out tragically because they're not all wonderful people. You can't expect everyone to be a good person. And I think the third thing I took from this is she's fallen out with her father because she was disgusted by her father. She was disgusted by her father's way of dealing with things. She was disgusted by the way her father did business. She was disgusted with the fact he's this mob boss that lives by the rules of might is right. And I think she was also fearful that as his daughter, she was a younger version of him, that she would have those genes that inside her was him, that she could be cold, ruthless, that she could be somebody like her father. And she escaped her father and aimed to prove him wrong. She aimed to prove him wrong. She aimed to prove that there was good in people, and that if you looked for the good in people and you found the best bits of them, they could all be turned into wonderful people. And she didn't believe in might was right. She was submissive. She always tried to do the right thing by the townsfolk, no matter what the townsfolk did to her. Then at the end, when her father turns up, she realizes she's her father's daughter. And she slaughters the town folk. She gives the order to kill them all. And in some cases, in inventive and truly horrible ways, to teach them all a lesson for what they did to her. And when it comes down to the very, very final part of the film, she chooses to execute Tom, the man that earlier in the film she claimed she was in love with, because of the way that, despite him claiming to love her, he ultimately sided with the town folk over her and made her life even more miserable. And that was her becoming her father. So they were the three things I took from it, that ultimately you can measure the good of people by how they react when they have power, that you can't just look for the good in people, and people who do just look for the good in people end up being bitterly disappointed, and also that nature is more important than nurture. She ended up being her father, and despite the fact that scared her and disgusted her in some ways, well, in the end, it was very cathartic to her to behave like her father, and she became everything she'd raged against and tried to escape from. So that's what I took from it. What do you think to that analysis, guys?
No, I'd agree. I mean, the arrogant speech that James Caan gave was brilliant, that kind of set it all off at the end. And yeah, although he is a liberal, a Jewish liberal who made the film, I'm surprised he had that at the end, Because you'd think they'd be pushing the whole, you've got to love everyone for everything they do kind of shit that we normally get. But it's, I know it's a difficult one, but no, you can't, you have to judge people by their actions. And yeah, she does judge them, she kills them. But as I said earlier, she had the choice to leave. Which I think, yeah, she was slowly turning into her dad halfway through the film, and she realises that people aren't perfect. And she literally just stayed to teach them a lesson, and she knew that was coming. So maybe she was deliberately letting all these things happen, which she was deliberately letting all these things happen, to teach them a lesson. But it didn't really need to take 3 hours.
I mean, as I just said, I think it's very Old Testament revenge style morality. So, yeah, that's what I'd say about that. And, you know, the Hobbesian view of man, that we're ultimately animals and we need a strong state and moral authority to control our animalistic true selves.
You see, people have said that Lars von Trier, obviously, you know, had communist parents. He's obviously a leftist. He's obsessed. His other films make it seem that he's got some obsession with sex or with, you know, sexual misadventures. And there were several disturbing, you know, scenes of rape in this film. And there was also a disturbing scene where a little boy is obsessed with the idea of being spanked by Grace. So there are certain moments in this film that would, you know, point towards Lars von Trier being something of a, you know, a man with a slightly deviant mind. But watching this as a nationalist, I did find this very, very interesting. And I found it interesting for a couple of reasons. Now, the first reason is that today we face this unprecedented, you know, we'll call it, you know, whether you want to call it an immigration crisis, a refugee crisis, you know, replacement migration, however you want to put it, we are facing an unprecedented change in our lifetimes that sees white people reduced to a minority in their ancestral homeland or in the lands that their forefathers founded. Now, that's something which is often promoted on the back of an idea of equality, of all people being the same, of all people being equal. And not only that, but we're constantly told by the media that we should see the good in people, that we should always look for the good in others, that, you know, we shouldn't be listening to the stories about, you know, migrant rapes, etc. We should be, in fact, looking for the good in these people. You know, instead of looking for the rapist, we should be looking for the rocket scientist. Instead of looking for, you know, the person who's going to do us harm, we should be looking for the person who's going to, you know, drive our taxis or, you know, cut our kebabs. And that really is, you know, when you break it down into the most basic way, that's really what our government says to us, isn't it? That fundamentally, we should be looking for those things, and we should see the best in people. And the media certainly tells us that we should always be looking for the best in others. And this film goes against that grain. And I think it's really interesting that it goes against that grain. And fundamentally, the guy who made it is somebody that probably is diametrically opposed to all of our viewpoints. Yet he made this film, which is, you know, fundamentally a very, very thought-provoking film that brings up uncomfortable points that the establishment wouldn't usually acknowledge. I'll give you another example. One of the running themes is that when people are presented with power, that is when they should be judged. And the townsfolk, who are people who are initially presented with nothing or as having nothing, presented as people who have been kept down, very humble people, maybe similar to the way refugees are shown by the media, the way refugees are portrayed by the establishment. But as soon as those town folk got the slightest amount of power, boom, they were raping Grace, they were abusing her, they were treating her worse than they treated Moses, the town dog. And again, I draw a real analogy there with the people who flood into this country as so-called refugees, because they come here, we show them kindness, we put them in a position where they are fed, they are clothed, they're watered, they're put in these lovely hotels. Yet we hear all these horror stories, anti-white racial attacks, rapes, sexual assaults. As soon as these people are given a little, what do they do with the little they get? They usually do something which isn't particularly conducive to the well-being of the indigenous people. And I really do think that's another thing that you can draw from this as a nationalist. Did you guys see any of these things? Because I've got to say, I think if somebody like myself had made this film, not that I'm a filmmaker, people would have definitely said that this film was, you know, had hidden messages which were very, very anti-liberal.
No, I definitely agree. I wrote that down as well, how we're told you need to trust these people, they'll be fine. Oh, look at them. Look at them being all helpful in the NHS, etc. It was equivalent to her, I don't know, helping mow a pretend raspberry bush. And then when they get the power, the boot turns onto the other foot, as it did in this film. So there is that parallel there. Luckily for that community, though, they got to vote whether they wanted the illegal, so to speak, in their town, which is something we don't. We don't get to ring the bell 15 times, because it definitely wouldn't if we had that choice. But no, there is a nationalist undertone to it. In, I think I said at the start that this is what happens. You let outsiders into your community and it all goes wrong. And as we've seen across this country and the West, people do die. But the media, as you said, Mark, just overlook that thing. Just focus on the positives. Look at the happy nurse. No, let's look at the poor girl that's been butchered in a park. So that would probably go against his values, but he's probably got other reasons for it. But then, as John Hurt said at the end of the film, nothing's going to be explained anyway. So kind of just left guessing as to what he actually meant, which is probably why there's so many theories from the film as well, which is good. It's good to have a film that makes you think rather than having everything explained in detail. But then it's a European film, not an American film. And we're not simple. Joke.
I wouldn't go as far to say as it has a nationalist undertone. I would say it's more of a critique of this sort of like small town barbarian peasant than anything, you know, like a helpless young girl comes in and gets, you know, raped multiple times and abused in a short period. You know, all these communist types and new lefty types, you know, their ultimate image is of humanity is some utopia where everyone has feminine values of, you know, getting on with each other, and male power doesn't exist, and everyone's this big happy family. But yeah, talking of power, I mean, I love this Plato quote that the measure of a man is what he does with power. And just reading it now, I thought of Matt Hancock, you know, the health minister that locked us inside for a year. You know, what did he do with power? He just decided to lock everyone inside for a year, initiate an affair, you know, cheat on his wedding vows, And now he's cashing out in I'm a Celebrity. And that's who we've got, you know, ruling our society. And then you look back in history to, you know, other people that had power, like, you know, Catholic kings that put themselves on the line and on the battlefield, because they had the ultimate belief in God and the divine moral order. So yeah, in modernity, these topics are going to be discussed forever. But yeah, in the media, it's always a critique of the patriarchy. Really, I would like to see things that are a critique of moral nihilism, but it always seems to get directed at white men in these Hollywood films.
Well, talking of white men, Grace's dad is obviously, played by James Caan, is obviously a white man. Grace's dad is the guy who, fundamentally drove Grace away during this argument. Now, some people might say that this film has something to do with, what could you call it, daddy issues. You know, it could have something to do with, you know, a girl essentially trying to rebel against her father, and that rebellion going very, very wrong. Now, again, I do find that like a really, really interesting idea for a film. And the reason I find it so interesting, the reason I find that those themes really interesting, is because Hollywood generally portrays father figures in kind of a negative way, doesn't it? Hollywood will generally portray a father as overbearing, out of touch, you know, he's got it all wrong, you know, the dad doesn't know what he's talking about. And generally speaking, if you watch films aimed particularly at young people, the message always seems to be, when involving a parental figure, tends to be that fundamentally the parent is out of touch and the young person sees things from a different point of view. And when the young person sees things from a different point of view, the young person then educates the older person in this new, better way. And this film doesn't follow that either, does it? That the father ends up coming to collect his daughter, and the daughter realizes that the father was right all along, that, you know, dad was correct. And that's pretty bold. I think it's pretty bold anyway, because again, these films usually have the father as the out of touch, the old fashioned. But when the dad arrives here, the dad actually finds out that he was correct, and Grace gives herself to her father, puts herself back into her father's care, and goes back with him to work with him as an equal in the family business. And that, again, is so strange, because she was obviously fleeing the mob. She was fleeing the family business. And instead, she goes back to it. Now, I don't, unless anyone can point out, another film that does that, I don't think I've ever seen a film do that. I don't think I've ever seen a film start with the dad being, you know, the bad guy like this, or you perceive the dad to be the bad guy, and end with the dad being the good guy, the dad actually being the one that had it right. Dad was right all along. That doesn't usually happen. Again, goes against the grain, but also potentially goes against Von Trier's upbringing and his left-wing beliefs.
No, I can't think of another film where it turns out the father's in the right at the end. I mean, you get the cheesy American films where the dad saves the day, but it's usually some horrible liberal Christmas film or Mrs. Doubtfire. But no, but then it's, although it goes against his beliefs, you still don't know why he's doing it. Because I don't think he's doing it subversively for the normal population. I think he's just doing it to wind people up because he's a provocateur, which is why he's made this film and like Nymphomaniac and Antichrist. He's just trolling people, basically. So I don't think he's put any great thought into it. He just likes to wind people up and enrage people.
I mean, in the slightly older films, I couldn't name one, but I do seem to remember these, you know, sort of gangster characters that are, you know, they're just amoral murderers and they end up being right. Or, you know, about the brutal reality of life and power dynamics. And they're kind of endearing and you can't help but like them. I do think that is quite a common theme in older films, but in the last 20 years particularly, it's just been endless critique of the white patriarchy. So that's how I'd see it.
But this wasn't a critique of the patriarchy. Ultimately, the patriarchy in this is correct. And also, something else that was quite interesting in this film is he made a point of not making the townsfolk be all simple white people. Now, I thought there was going to be some kind of sting in this. I thought that there was going to be something like all the townsfolk would be sort of simple, downtrodden white people and predominantly white males, and they would do hideous things to this Grace, and maybe the other women in the town would go along with the horribleness and, you know, be sort of, you know, bullied into it, but not really be instigators. But quite interestingly, in this film, there are black members of the town that are just as vile to Grace as others. There are people with learning difficulties just as vile to Grace as the others, women just as vile to Grace as the men. And I didn't pick anything, unless I've missed something here or overlooked something here. I'm not trying to make this out to be some nationalist film. I'm not saying that, but I didn't pick anything out in this film that was particularly anti-nationalist. I didn't see anything in this production which was sort of, I don't know, against sort of white people. I didn't see anything anti-white in this. Now, again, if I've missed something, I'll happily be corrected. But I did find it interesting that in the small town, you know, Von Trier even made it very, very clear that there was, you know, this black lady in the town, and she's just as bad as the white people with the abuse. So what do you guys think to that? Did you see anything in this film that was potentially anti-white that I've overlooked?
Nothing jumped out as anti-white. Yeah, it had the token black lady, and she mentioned how she'd to Grace how she'd be getting a whipping if she didn't do the job that she was meant to be doing. But no, there was nothing that's made out all white people are bad. I mean, the whole cast was white. It's set in, what, during the Great Depression in America, in a small town, which would be invariably fully white anyway. But no, it wasn't as in-your-face as you'd get now. But bear in mind, this was 2003, so if you made it now, it'd probably be quite different. Oh, also, I've just been reminded there is a film where the dad slash uncle saves the day. Uncle Buck, because he fixes the family and all the kids start to love their dad again when he gets home.
And it's a good film. Uncle Buck, that is. Carry on, Nativist.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's anti-white. But, the only way you could really claim that is it's a sort of a critique of America. I'd guess it's somewhere like Colorado. That's where the Rocky Mountains are. I think it's still a red state to this day. But yeah, that's about the only angle. I think it's more just a critique of of human nature. But yeah, I can't work out what if he has any sort of solutions for his critique of mankind. Maybe I'll actually look into this. If Von Trier has any political opinions.
Now, another thing that I thought was very, very thought-provoking about this film is usually in any form of... And we're saying this isn't a Hollywood film. Now, I know that's being said tonight, that this is not a Hollywood film. And that's interesting because it's obviously filled with pretty big name Hollywood actors and actresses. Also, why do people call actresses actors these days? Do you guys have an answer for that? I've noticed now
it's feminism.
It's a gender neutral world now, isn't it?
Yeah, I always find that really irritating when people call actresses actors, and it just seems to have become sort of like part of the accepted lexicon now that everyone's an actor and there's no such thing as an actress. Very strange. Anyway, as I was saying, we keep saying this isn't a Hollywood film because it was obviously made by Von Trier, is not a typical Hollywood director, but it is filled with Hollywood A-list talent, isn't it? This film is not devoid of star power. And I don't see... I mean, he didn't do very well at the box office. At the time, it was written off largely by many as just being pretentious nonsense. But why do you think all of these... with this not having the sort of standard, Hollywood message, etc., why do you think so many... Hollywood, A-listers would get behind a film like this, with it having this kind of message, with it having this strange kind of production? What do you think drew them to this? Because it's not an activist film, is it? It doesn't carry one of these typical Hollywood messages. Is Von Trier some kind of visionary director? Is he somebody that isn't actually isn't part of like the Michael Bay set? Obviously, is he somebody that people are clamoring to work with? Again, I find that very, very... It's just a bit of a head scratcher for me.
I think there's a thing with Hollywood actors where they like to be pushed into doing something that's different from the normal crap they get given. Like Nicole Kidman has done all the mainstream films, and she's known for kind of going off the path a little bit with like Eyes Wide Shut and some of her, The Northman. I think they just like to be challenged, don't they? Because Willem Dafoe regularly works for Lars von Trier as well. I mean, he's not the most normal of people, but I think they just like something different. They like working in Europe, as they like to put it. And it's interesting that Lars von Trier has never been to America because he's scared of flying. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. Rather interesting.
He's never been there, which annoyed some American critics because they see it as a criticism of America, especially with the end credits showing all things that happen in America. But he won't ever leave the country because he doesn't like flying.
Yeah, I can understand that. If you're making a film about a country and you've never been to it, that is some chutzpah.
But yeah, I think that's probably where the $10 million budget come from, just the big name actors who who like to do small films as well, like Bill Murray did Lost in Translation, another film set in like two locations, but real ones, which was a good film. Don't come at me. I think it's like to broaden out, but not if there are some actors who will only take the big money for the big films. You're not going to see Will Smith doing some small crappy film, and nor would you want to see him anyway. So I think they just like, they like to be something different. I think they do it for the awards as well, but they didn't get any for this.
Did they not at all? I think that's actually surprises me.
That really shocks me. That is actually, there's very few things that shock me, but I've got to say that has, you know, that has actually shocked me that there wasn't any awards given for this. I know it won.
Not big awards. It won Best Film in Russia.
In Russia, yeah. I think Mark Kermode gave it his Film of the Year as well. I think The Guardian loved it too. And it's really interesting that The Guardian loved it, because obviously they're a left-wing newspaper. I don't know how they took their message from it, or whether they just thought it was an interesting film, or whether they just thought it would be sort of cool to like it, because obviously it's very, very different to, you know, modern films. I don't know. I'm sort of struggling to get my head around sort of why this was made. And I'm also struggling to sort of see this from other points of view. And it's very, very difficult to actually say, well, hey, this is a nationalist film, or this film is sort of more of our way kind of thing. Because if you say that, you kind of open yourself up to ridicule, because none of these films are really pushing for the things that we actually want, are they? You know, you don't actually see a director, you know, holding our point of view or fighting for the things that we are fighting for. But at the same time, fundamentally, this did push lots of core messages that we would identify with. And again, very, very strange. Now, the ending, when the ending came, and I've got to say this, it is a brutal ending. Grace orders everyone killed. And when she orders them killed, she's not ordering them killed, you know, in a nice way either. I mean, not that's particularly a nice way to, you know, be ordered to be sort of slaughtered, but she is quite vindictive. And in some of the ways she chooses people to be killed, she is, she's very vindictive and inventive as well in her punishments. But I've got to say this, as I've grown older, I tend to find some scenes in films difficult to watch. So we talked about the film The Northman, and I found the people being burnt alive in the, or the children, the young boys being burnt alive by the Viking invaders. It's quite a difficult film, a difficult scene to watch. I didn't like it. I find it a little bit, made me feel uncomfortable, the thought of these, you know, boys being herded in somewhere to be, you know, burnt alive. I, you know, it wasn't something that I enjoyed watching. And I got some criticism for saying that. I got people saying, oh, you know, grow up, pull yourself together, man. You know, it's only a film. You know, that's the realities of life. That's how things were. But in this, when Grace orders the killings of all the townsfolk, and some in a horrible way, you know, including the children who tormented her as well, I actually didn't feel sorry for any of them. I actually watched it and thought, these people truly deserve this. And the only one inhabitant of the town she allows to live is Moses the dog. At the end, her father says, oh, you know, shoot the dog as well. And she's like, no, Moses has done nothing wrong. He's just a dog that barks all the time because he's angry that people haven't been feeding him properly. And yeah, I for such a disturbing scene, I did feel the people had it totally coming. I don't know what you felt about it. At the end, did you think she went too far? Did you find it something that was uncomfortable, the destruction of the town? Or did you find it justified? Did it, at the end, were you like me and thought, hey, this woman's got every right, you know, to bring down, you know, hell on earth on these people. I don't know. What was your thoughts, Sir St. Harrison?
I like the ending. I like the fact that when she said, kill her kids, and if she cries, then... what was it? Then kill her.
Oh, well, I'm going to explain this properly. I'm going to explain.
This is going to get clipped and used against us.
Yeah, I've got to explain this properly. Grace, when Grace arrives in the town, she's walking around, and it is a very depressed place. And there's only one little store in the town, and the store essentially sells overpriced tat. But in the window, there are these little figurines of what appear to be. Would you guys agree with it? Like, they're like cherubs. They're like little figurines of cherubs. And the cherub figurines are pretty tasteless, to be honest. And she actually takes a liking to them for some reason. Although she works very, very hard in the town for very little pay, she chooses to save up her meager pay and then uses it to buy these figurines. And she buys these figurines with the intention of decorating the shack that she's living in, to make her life a little nicer. And she sets her sights on it. And she loves these figurines, the simplicity of them, the fact that most people would think they were tasteless. But to her, she sort of falls in love with them. And one of the women who... one of the women, his husband, rapes her, turns up at her shack with other women. And they are very, very horrible to Grace. They torture her, in fact, but in a different kind of way, not physically. They hold her and say, look, we're going to smash your figurines. And because she'd been teaching the children stoicism, she says, we'll see how stoic you are. We'll see if you understand stoicism. I'm going to smash one of your figurines. And if you cry, I'm going to smash another. And the more you cry, the more I'll smash. But if you can stand there and not cry, I won't smash anymore. And Grace bursts into tears because they're the one thing that she saved up for. They're the one thing that she, you know, she took some pride in her little shack where she's living. And as she cries, the figurines get smashed to smithereens. And when her father gives the order to execute everybody in the town, she says, hey, wait a second, not that woman. That woman, line her children up first and execute them one by one. And if she doesn't cry, they can live. That's the least I can do. That's what I owe her, she says. And again, it's very, very interesting because she comes up with these sort of inventive ways to get back at the people who tortured her. That's the scene you're referring to, isn't it, St. Harrison?
That's the one after she gets caught knocking off the woman's husband. But in terms of did I feel sorry for them when they all got killed? No, I didn't feel uncomfortable either because you knew just how the way the film was made. You were going to see like elaborate special effects and bits and pieces of everyone going flying everywhere, which I think kind of tamed it down a bit.
What did you think to the ending, Nativist?
It was a big contrast to the rest of the film. I didn't really have any emotional attachment to the murders at the end. You know, children get killed. That's not ideal. I wouldn't say they were morally responsible, but you know, rapists, you could see the case for revenge murder. The little kids that demanded to be spanked. I didn't really care about him getting knocked off either. I don't know. There's something about gangsters coming and doing a cleansing that's... you don't feel that emotionally involved when it happens in film. I can't think of anything. I mean, like the Godfather baptism scene It is probably my favourite scene in all of cinema. And that's just a power struggle between criminal clans. It's a little bit difficult to see children and a baby get killed, but I wasn't overly emotional about it.
Thank you. Now, obviously, we haven't got Laura with us tonight, so today's stream hasn't really taken as much time as it usually would. Usually, if you've got an extra person on, and we've got some, have we got any questions? We don't actually have any questions or anything raised by the viewer. I think this is a bit of a niche film as well, which I'm not going to say it makes it more difficult to review. It's just fewer people have obviously seen it, and obviously, as fewer people have seen it, you're going to get less comments and less interest on a show like this. So, I'm going to wrap things up slightly earlier than usual because. Obviously, there's no point just talking around the issue. But before we do our roundups, I'm going to ask something different that I don't usually ask people on these shows. But how did this film make you feel? What was the feeling that was that you were left with at the end?
That's an incredibly gay question. I mean, at the start of the film, I felt bored. Then I felt interested once I started getting into it. By the end, I was elated.
How do I feel? I mean, I feel like this whole moral theme has been done for decades. I feel it's well explored. It wasn't original to me. I mean, we studied an Inspector Calls in school for GCSE English, I believe it was. And that's about a young girl that gets abused by, you know, powerful people. So it reminded me very much of that. It's not a new theme at all for me. I wouldn't say it like challenged me or made me think in a new way or anything like that. It's just this old problem of nihilistic society and people not fearing God and people not having, you know, moral character and essentially being animals when they're behind closed doors or with a vulnerable person within their power. When you see people that have acted morally reprehensible way, like rapists and abusers, and there's a great cleansing at the end, you know, there is that kind of like Old Testament catharsis where, you know, the problem's dealt with and justice has been served. I mean, there's still something that's appealing about that, like an eye for an eye. But yeah, nothing new for me.
You see, at the end of this film, I did feel differently to what I expected to feel. Now, usually when I watch a film, I tend to find something redeeming about somebody in that picture. I find something redeeming about somebody in that picture. And that might sound like an odd thing to say, but even in films like we reviewed Cannibal Holocaust last month, and even in that, which is a pretty gruesome and brutal film, but even in that film, when it came to the killings at the end, I did feel a certain degree of sympathy for the horrible camera crew. I did feel like, oh, especially when they killed the girl, I was just like, oh, that's a bit, it just made you slightly squeamish and slightly like, oh God, you know, they did go quite far there, didn't they? And with this film, I didn't feel that. And that's what I mean by how did I feel about it? How did I feel different about it? And yeah, I did fundamentally. I felt differently about this film to how I would have expected to feel. Usually, if you'd have told me about this film, I would have probably said, you know what? I'd probably end up feeling some kind of sorrow or thinking they'd gone too hard on the townsfolk. But at the end of the film, I found a couple of different emotions. Firstly, I was absolutely disgusted with the townfolk. For some reason, this film sold me on the hatred for the antagonists more than most films do. Secondly, I felt good for Grace that she'd got her revenge, and I felt it was thoroughly deserved. But I also felt very, very happy about the way the film had turned out. I felt happy because I felt happy because at the beginning of the film, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be awful. I'm not going to enjoy any of this. It's going to be boring. It's got this weird way of presenting itself. And I actually wasn't looking forward particularly to watching it. And at the end of it, I did find that I'd really, really enjoyed it. And I hadn't enjoyed it because of, you know, the gruesome ending or, you know, anything like that. I'd enjoyed it because of a story. And there was something about what Lars von Trier did with this film. And it was focusing on the story. He focused on a tale that was very, very interesting and drew you in. And despite the pretentious, in my opinion, nature of the production, I was gripped by the story. And this is going to be my final question before we round things up. Lars von Trier obviously wanted to focus on story. Now, is that something that's often overlooked in Hollywood? Because I said that at the beginning that film is a visual medium, and film is, of course, a visual medium. But sometimes with modern films, would you say that potentially too much is put into the film as a visual medium, that too much time and effort is actually spent, you know, on the film looking good and special effects and budget, etc. Whereas, you know, really, you want more of a focus on actual storytelling. And this film focused on storytelling, and it did deliver a thought-provoking story. Now, despite, you know, your opinions, you know, on this film, whether you think it's a pretentious mess or whether you think it's actually, you know, wonderful. What do you think, guys? Do you believe that this focus on storytelling is something that's fresh and something that Hollywood needs?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was his whole idiom back in the 90s, wasn't it? When he filmed that whole little kind of group to make the Dogme 95 films, where they had rules about you couldn't use fake lighting, you couldn't use a soundtrack, you couldn't have, it was basically all just focusing on the story. You couldn't have anything to make it look like some crap Hollywood film. And when we look back to Dunkirk, which we reviewed a couple of months ago, that was the complete opposite. It was just all visual with absolutely no story, and it made it a terrible film. I know some people disagree with that, and this is the complete opposite. So they've made the most of their small amount of money to make a really, really good story. And it is missing from a lot of mainstream films because they've got so much money, it's just spent to, well, how do I put it? Avatar, for instance. I can't even watch it. I've seen the trailer, and I'd never want to watch the whole film because it looks absolutely terrible. It's just...
No, Avatar's brilliant.
A porn mag for the eyes, whereas this is you want a decent story if you can especially sit there for 3 hours or even 2 hours. But yeah, I've heard different things about Avatar.
I will strongly defend Avatar. I saw that in the IMAX and had a great time. Obviously Hollywood output is mostly garbage. The budget all goes on CGI and The Rock or Chris Hemsworth, and it's just endless killing. And now it's feminist killers. And there's probably only about 4 films a year that are worth seeing at the cinema. But that's capitalism in action. I've made this point before on this stream, that if you want to maximize profit from film, you cater it to the whole world and you make it simple and culturally appropriate to the whole world. So it's just like some basic hero arc where he delivers on a liberal principle against the evil fascist or whatever. That's like the standard formulation. And then you can mix in all the multiracialism onto the good side, and then you make the baddies slightly Nordic looking and orderly, and that's basically what it is. There is no story. It's just repeats upon repeats. There's no creativity coming out of film, like mainstream film, or I don't see it in music either. I feel like these mediums are played out, and that's all I can say, really. I suppose I should make a bigger effort to watch more, art house cinema or foreign cinema, because I'm sure there's a lot of worthwhile stuff that's been done before, and I'm being lazy. The mainstream product is always going to be just garbage for the masses. And it's only going to get worse.
Well, thank you for that. And I've got to say, I do enjoy the odd blockbuster film. I'm not saying that, everything that Hollywood does is sort of trash, or I'm certainly not saying none of it can be enjoyed in any way, shape or form. I just believe that this film focused on storytelling and it was better for it. It was a better picture for making that conscious decision to focus on, the actual story and the characterization. And at the end of it, as I say, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more for that than I thought I was going to. And that's a good thing, because we watch these films, obviously, week in, week out. We do these film, well, not week in, month out. Sort of. We do these, film reviews. And we do watch, a wide range of different movies which cover sort of different topics. But I've got to say, this, out of all of the films we've watched, has probably been the only film that I started off disliking and ended up liking. It's probably the only film that at the end of it, I came out of it with a very, very different view of the film than I had at the beginning. And I think that's quite special. I think that's quite a powerful thing. I think it's good. And I think it's good that films like that are being made. And I'm not saying this guy's a wonderful guy. I'm not saying he's our guy. I'm not saying that, people should rush out and necessarily watch this particular picture. But I do think that if you like an interesting story with a few interesting twists and you've got a little bit of time on your hands, because it is a lengthy film, I think you could do a lot worse than this. So look, let's start by giving our roundups, giving our scores out of 10. We're going to do a Christmas movie next month, but we'll put up a poll Not tonight because Laura's not here, but we'll put up a poll about that at some point. So start with you, St. Harrison. What's your score out of 10 and do you recommend this?
So it's a good story. There's a good cast and what could have been a shorter and better film if made slightly more conventionally, but the pretentiousness does let it down a bit. I wouldn't want to watch it again, but I wouldn't discourage anyone from watching it either. So I would, based on the story alone, give it a 7 out of 10.
I think it's an original film, you know, particularly in the production. Obviously, I've made the point that the moral frame of the story is decades old, but all the same, these things are worth thinking about, and I do think Von Trier gets to some interesting points. I think the acting's flawless. It's the best thing about the film. Great cast. I'd have to give it a 7.5 out of 10. A little bit too pretentious for me, but overall, worth a watch.
Okay, well, I'm going to give it, and this is probably going to surprise people, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I'm going to be slightly kinder to it than the other guys here. Now, I really enjoyed this film, and it made me, you know, feel a different way about it than I thought I was going to. When I first saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, I got 3 hours of this crap to watch. And by the end of it, I was like, wow, that's brilliant. I need to rewatch certain parts of this before we do the review. And it's very, very rare does a film get me like that. And as I say, it's a special film. It's a special film because it strips everything back to storytelling and to storytelling alone. And to basically immersing you in a tale that is actually worth hearing, that is worth being told, and a tale that's thought-provoking. Not only is it thought-provoking, but it's actually really, really interesting. And once you're hooked into that story, I didn't know where it was going to go. I wasn't sure where that tale was going to lead me. I didn't know whether I was going to end up enjoying it. I didn't know whether I was going to end up hating it. And when the twists and turns came, I wasn't expecting them, which is something that's odd for me because I'm usually that guy in the cinema that will start, you know, watching a film and then it'll get to a point where I'll be like, right, he's the double agent or he's the spy. Yeah, he's working against the team. He's going to betray them. And I can see where everything's going to, how everything's going to unfold. And this film wasn't like that for me one bit. It was a film that I had to watch to its conclusion because it was that interesting. It was that good. And that really doesn't happen for me very often. So yeah, I really, really recommend it. So you're probably going to be thinking, why, when I've given it such a fantastic, you know, bill of health, so to speak, why not a 9 and why not a 10? And I will say this, I like things being stripped back and being more based around a story. But this was done to the point of pretension, unfortunately. I feel that Lars von Trier had a really, really good idea with this film, but he took that good idea and unfortunately he took it to such an extreme that it kind of spoilt it a little bit for me. And yeah, I don't particularly like the idea of watching a film on a soundstage. And if it had been in, although I learned to accept that, I do think a little bit of a small set would have made the film just that little bit better. So yeah, that's my take on the film. So basically, it seems that everyone enjoyed this, and we are going to be back next month. we will come up with a Christmas film. You'll be able to vote on that. I'll put something in the on my Telegram when we've spoken to Laura and discussed what everyone's choices are. But as we're still running now, I'll say to anyone in the chat, does anyone have any ideas for a Christmas film? And thank you to Cat Hugger, who gave $5. She said thank you. It was her suggestion. Does anyone have any ideas for a Christmas film? If you do, speak now and I'll note them down.
Jack Frost from 1997.
You're going to get your say, mate, because you're part of the film club. Anyway, if you've got any ideas for a film, pop it in the Odyssey or the live chat now. We're going to close things down because obviously Laura's not here. So, yeah, guys, do you want to give yourself a little outro each and then I'll close things down?
Have a good week, everyone. If you haven't already and you haven't made your Christmas pudding, get onto my channel and watch how to make one. But please, please boil it before you put it in the cupboard for the next 5 weeks. And yeah, have a good week, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry, I've been a bit out of sorts with extreme fatigue, but it was in aid of a greater cause, I would say, the Polish Nationalist March. It happens every year on the 11th of November, and I'd recommend everyone to come. It is an amazing event, and it'd be great to see more Europeans from different countries representing their nations as well. Because ultimately, I think we need to be united as European nations to save our peoples.
Brilliant, mate. Can you just answer me one question, though? Did you need to be jabbed to get into Poland?
Oh, no. No, I've been traveling all over the place for, you know, more than a year, and I've not needed any evidence of vaccine. I used a recovery evidence for Croatia about, you know, almost a year ago, but that's it. It doesn't really exist anywhere in the world now, apart from places like Bali and China. But
and America.
Oh, yeah, in America, yeah. But they're selling the vaccines, so they're always going to have the... Yeah, it comes back to capitalism at the end of the day regarding them, I would say.
Well, whatever it comes down to, mate, I don't like it very much. And I'd be very happy to attend the Polish Independence Day March. Although one thing I wouldn't want to be doing is taking that jab to do it. But it's something I'll certainly consider in the future. So thank you for that. Anyway, we've come to the end of the stream. Laura and Sam are back tomorrow for Tea Time with Sam and Laura. That's always one to look forward to. And I will be back on Wednesday for Patriotic Weekly Review. And we have Eric Stryker as our special guest. So that is always, always one to look forward to. So thank you to everyone. Thank you to all those who tuned in. Thank you to those who donated. Thank you to St. Harrison and Nativist. And I hope you have a good weekend, or what's left of it anyway. Thank you, everyone, and good night.